This evening I'd like to offer some reflections on the key teaching in the Buddha's teachings, the teaching of avijja, or avijja, A-V-I-J-J-A, which is translated often as ignorance, but I've found that it makes a lot more sense to me when it's translated as not seeing, which is a more direct translation, not seeing. And there's another word which is closely associated, and sometimes I think they're used interchangeably, and again, arguably, they have similar or different meanings. It's moha, delusion, M-O-H-A, delusion. Which we might understand that as misseeing, misperceiving. So avijja, not seeing, not perceiving, and moha, misseeing, misunderstanding, not seeing, missing it, not getting it. Apparently that word is also related to the word vedana, for feeling. So it's like it's got that sort of, like you could theoretically know, or, it's kind of like you see a tree, but you don't really, it's when you bump into it, you really, oh yeah, there's really a tree there. So that kind of really, what do we understand? What do we really know? And the teaching here is that we suffer because, primarily, or say one of the key conditions in that suffering is that we are misunderstanding, we're misseeing, we're misperceiving in some very, very crucial ways the nature of experience. And because of these misperceptions, we struggle and resist and suffer. So this would be a really good thing to understand if you're interested in the end of suffering. So I took this up at one point because I realised I hear this, ignorance. Yeah, ignorance is the cause of suffering. Yeah, I know that, yeah. And then I realised, actually, what does that mean? And this is one of, again, this great way of practicing, studying, where you take something that you think, I'd really like to know what that means, that really means. And then you live with it, and you read about it, and you live it, and you practice with it, and you inquire, and you, hopefully, after time, you go, I think maybe I understand this a bit more. And then if you're lucky, you get to talk about it to other people. I'll share that, some of that. So I hope this will be helpful, and I'd really also like to try to weave in a little bit the metta theme, the theme of kindness, and see how, where the connections are, with that theme and this teaching, because, sometimes you see it can be a bit separate, there's kindness over here and wisdom over here, and, what have they got to do with each other? But somehow, somewhere along there, along the line, there's a sense that actually wisdom and compassion are unified. Actually, it's like the awakened mind is this clear seeing, compassionate seeing. So it's much more intertwined, and so sort of seeing how our practice of kindness is really part of how. How we learn to really see. So I feel this really happening on this retreat for me, and I'm hearing it in others and the group, is that somehow by bringing kindness and really kind of focusing on that, feeling into that, kind of inclining to all the different ways that people are doing that, with the phrases and lots of other ways, and being in community and cooking lovely food and eating lovely food, and just the whole thing, really. How much sort of wisdom can unfold, how much we see, you know, because we feel safe and cared for, there's, you know, in that climate of kindness, that climate of safety, it's like we blossom, we learn, you know, we heal. It's that kind of amazing power of kind of shared intention and kind of that shared commitment to kindness, you know, as an intention, as a direction. So I found a teacher who expressed it like this. The meditation on love is the soil within which concentration and insight are cultivated. Yeah, so the concentration, the samadhi, that this gathered, this, you know, the mind begins to settle and gather and unify, and we feel more whole and more settled and more gathered and steadied. And how crucial that is to both the kind of clear seeing, you know, and the kind of seeing, oh, you know, this is fear, or this is, you know, me getting my knickers in a twist about something. And then it's actually that steadiness that helps the mindful seeing to actually be, you know, useful rather than just re-traumatizing or something, you know, and the learning can kind of go in. So this not seeing, and the seeing that's really being talked about is, what is the kind of seeing into our experience that is that really is conducive to, leads to, is supportive of healing, freedom, ease, you know, letting go. And so I want to go through perhaps some aspects of this to help maybe sort of understand a bit more. What that might mean, and there's some very particular ways in which the Buddha invites us to looking in ways that free the mind. So let's see. So I was thinking how this can sound so theoretical, but just, I think it was yesterday now, I'm not sure if I'm exactly remembering this. We were eating upstairs there with Paul and Sampo, and I think Sampo said, do you want to see a scary photo? Because we were looking at something on the phone, you know. And I said, is it me? I think that's Lamin. And he said, no, you are not the centre of the universe, Caroline. And I was like, no, you're right. And I thought this was a great example of avijja. Avijja, not seeing, or seeing, you know, it's like, and it wasn't, I think it was a picture of a snake. That's what we were talking about. Poisonous snakes and what they might look like, and it was kind of half a joke, but it was also, you know, that thing, somebody walks into the room and you kind of think, what have I done, you know, like, God, what have I done? and again, different patterns, but it's kind of this basic sense of me, you know, me, I, and how strongly, how deeply conditioned that is. And then when we don't see it and in a way relativize it, that it's just sort of yet another passing phenomenon that we can sort of hopefully laugh at sometimes and just recognize, and, you know, and not feel insulted by it. That there's a kind of inquiry, and we're not so much going into that in detail on this retreat, but this I am, you know, this I, and then just add any words after that. And the metta, maybe the relevance of the metta is that in a number of different ways we can bring kindness to all of this sense of I am and me, and begin to really identify it and hold it, and begin to realize that it's actually not, it's not who we are, it's not completely who we are, it's not fixed, or it's sort of these bits of this come and go, and even these very sort of deep-seated kind of core, you know, senses actually begin, when you start to bring that kindness and the thing starts to open and soften, and ooh, you know, maybe this isn't as fixed as, you know, I've thought. And I mean, just right now, if in this particular regard, just, you know, check in with your experience right now. Say if you shut your eyes and you just, you know, kind of snapshot of what is that? Is that what is happening? What is experience? And I mean, this is, yeah, we could spend a whole week or weeks and months on this, but just to get a flavor of this, okay. Can we begin to sort of sense, I'm like, oh, okay, we have such fixed idea, don't we? Well, I'm sitting here and I'm hearing, and well, you know, it's like, yeah, that's definitely part of it. And yet when you, okay, come in further to say your psychology and like your body, say your felt sense of the body, not the bits and pieces, you know, but like the whole kind of feeling of the whole mind, the whole sort of, you know, the whole blob, the whole, what does that feel like? You know, what is that kind of energy, feeling of, you know, pulsation, or maybe one bit aches a bit. Like if you really just start dropping away all the labelling and the, well, that's my arm, and, you know, I am sitting here, and if you just spend a few moments just letting that drop away a bit, what is there? So we start to see that perception is conditioned. We learn from when we're very, we start to learn to label things. You know, this, that, hearing, that's a chair, that's a cushion, these are people. But and maybe there's no particular problem with that, but can you see if we're doing that on a sort of psychological level with ourselves, with others, it's like there's a condition that we're constructing ourselves every moment, you know, aren't we? It's like, so just amazing, you know, there must be hundreds and thousands of things going on, it's like, to kind of keep together this sense of me. Oh. And maybe in the retreat and the meditation, this begins to calm down and quieten down. It's like, oh, you know, know, sometimes it's not so definite, not so clear. It's more like we're just a little sort of field of energy. So, you know, where is at the metta itself, maybe when we start to really be able to tune into that, it's like, that's not so much about me, is it? It's a kind of an energy, or it's a sense, it's something that it can't just put in a particular kind of me shape. It can be for us and for others, but and what does that do to, you know, I mean, to me that's like so much of the suffering just can, it gets hard to put into words. I don't know if you have any sense of what I mean, but there's a sense in which we're always kind of creating ourselves in a particular kind of shape. And once you begin to see that, even if it keeps doing it, you just can't take it so seriously anymore. You just kind of know. It's like, you know, that's not, it's kind of there and it's happening, but it's not the whole thing. As a writer, Buddhist scholar called Paiuto says, it is a contrived process of craving and clinging based on ignorance of the true nature of life, which causes the mistaken perception and attachment to a self, which clogs up the flow of nature. Flow of nature. So this is another kind of key seeing. Can we, if we can see more clearly and more closely that experience, phenomena, is like it's in this constant change, impermanence, anicca, uncertain sort of, and again the conditioning of our mind to fix, solidify, make, like creating patterns so that we can orientate ourselves, so that we can find some feeling of a basis, a place to be. So seeing change and the kindness of that, isn't it? The kindness of that. Sort of, if everything is truly in flux and flow, that means, what does that mean? Yeah, everything can change, but not me. I'm really, you know, this is the way I am. But to begin to see that in our own experience, in our own sort of inner world, in the world around us, in the way we see people. You know, I remember a particular, you know, key person in my life had been very difficult, and at a certain point he started to age and become more frail, and then my perception of him started to really change, and a lot more compassion and understanding came in, and, you know, I'd never thought that could change, and it did. And it wasn't just me doing it, it was kind of, oh, you know, that external change in that case sort of helped me to shift in my view of him. So the insubstantiality, so this is like with metta practice, as the samadhi perhaps deepens, as the, you know, and our sense of ourself can sometimes become softer or more, you know, indistinct. That it's in a way, it's like, it's that simple. It's that, it can be that immediate. Right here, right now. And all those lovely Pali words that Paul was talking last night, I can't remember them all. That, present here and now, inviting investigation, leading onward, leading to peace. Like, Can you see that sense? It's like a shift of perception. That right here and now you can sort of see yourself as, see others as like, it's this kind of, yeah. I mean, maybe some reflection on what's happening physically can help. All these sort of hundreds of millions of neurons firing and, you know, just incredible really. It's like what's going on in there, and it's the rate of change. I mean, the slower it's sort of, but yeah. On the level of the creation of suffering in the mind, it's like, oh. Softening, kind of, almost holding back from sort of naming things, so, you know, solidifying things sometimes. Sometimes very helpful to name. And then, what is that really? You know, even emotions at the level of energy start to become, well, what is that? Is that excitement or is that anxiety? Well, I don't know, it depends on how you look at it, actually. Or, you know, like you can play with in samadhi, you know, you can like, that energy of your body, you can perceive it as, you know, as metta, you know, like, and that can become really, you know, as real, really real. So, you know, it's difficult because we also obviously have to work at the level of our story and our experience and what has happened, but I feel like it's let's go through that. Let's go really honour that and give that the time and space. But go through that. Can we still see even our anguish? It's impermanent. It's circumstantial. It's changing. It's not me or my, it's not mine. It's not happening to me. You know, we're not rejecting anything, but sort of really, really, what is this? So these misperceptions of permanence and fixed solid self, and the third one of satisfactoriness. You know, it's like anything. You can get mind state, nice swim in the lake, or, you know, when we get hold of it and like, oh yeah, that's and how much there is some pleasure and there is some something in that, but oh, it's like the joy, you know, that wonderful Blake quote, which I haven't got with me, of the kissing the joy as it flies, you know, that sense of a deeper joy from being able to enjoy, let go, enjoy and know it as just, it's just that much. And then, yeah. So we can see and still appreciate and love, maybe, you know, it's, or maybe we can love more because we're not clinging, we're not, you know, we're not misunderstanding things as being sort of able to satisfy us and, you know, and able to be held on to, and so the kindness, the kindness that can come from that, because we understand everybody's falling apart. We're all crumbling. There's one way of looking at it, but yeah. So these misperceptions of solidity and how. Just can try that, changing your perception and just playing with that and seeing how much kind of ease and freedom can come. So, I mean, in a way, the whole of practice, the whole of the path is about kindness. And trying to see clearly, isn't it? Be where we are, understand what's happening and bring kindness to that. So another area I wanted to touch on in terms of not seeing, like I was saying, so we've touched a bit on misperception, sort of all the different ways we can sort of misunderstand or missee. And then there's just simply not seeing. That kind of sense of losing touch with what's happening and getting sort of sucked up. I almost think it's like one of those great big, like a big vacuum cleaner, like you get sucked into, oh, you know, some sort of storm of reactivity, you know, of reactions and feeling, and you kind of like your feet, you're sort of picked up off the ground. Oh, I know, I'm getting an image of a magnetic thing that picks up cars, you know, and just picks up and it's off the ground. And it's like that, we're kind of, can sometimes thought just up and we're in some thing, and there's a loss of presence and there's a loss of kind of being connected with the here and now. And I have three reflections from three teachers on the way that thought, thinking, is a key sort of aspect of avijja, of that we're so, isn't it, a lot of us in the West, maybe just generally, there's quite an addiction to thinking. And also to believe, sort of, yeah, to give too much authority or power, sort of, to the thinking as, you know, truth and wisdom, and so on. So I just want to go through these. So Tulku Urgen Rinpoche, Tibetan teacher, he says, distraction involves the awareness wisdom being taken over by ignorance, the knowing by the unknowing, innate and conceptual. Bear with this. Innate ignorance is simply to forget. So there's the just not seeing, just not being there, forgetting. But conceptual ignorance comes in when we start to think, forming thought after thought. So doesn't this happen so much of the time? And so much of our practice is just simply unhooking, seeing that that's happening and unhooking again and again and again and again and again. And coming back, okay, what's actually happening? No, what's actually happening? John Peacock said this, which I really liked. No, as long as we associate with the chattering mind, we remain in the sway of linguistic determinism. To me, what the term linguistic determinism, I mean, it touches a bit on what I was talking about in my previous talk, but if we don't relativize or, you know, relate to language and sort of understand it as one part of experience, you know, then our experience becomes determined by our language, by concept, and so we'll remain limited to what we can sort of conceptually, you know, get our head round. So again, I suppose to me that's a real inspiration to really explore the realm of silence and the realm of body and the realm of feeling, you know, and the realm of heart, because there's a different kind of language going on there, a different kind of levels of experience. And otherwise we stay kind of on the surface with as much as language can do, isn't it? It's like the finger pointing at the moon and you just locked in on the finger. And yeah, in a way, learning always has to be somehow on the edge of what we don't know, isn't it? We don't know. Being able to bear that, you know, not having to kind of describe and know what's ahead. And so linguistic determinism, It's like trying to unhook from that. And the last one was from Ajahn Chah, and it's concerning doubt, which is a lot, I think, about thoughts, isn't it? Going back and forth. And he says, name doubt. Look for moments of clarity in your experience, not in your confusing thoughts. Learn the difference. So what's the difference between the experience of, say, anxiety and our thoughts about it? It's like that difference is the difference maybe between suffering and no suffering, no, entrapment and freedom, no, seeing and misseeing. Perhaps in our, you know, in our metta practice as well, like in relation to this, the use of thoughts, of sort of skillful thoughts and words and concepts to help us to kind of point us in the right direction, so that we can use thoughts skillfully. We're not trying to, you know, get rid of it. It's not all bad, but that we can relate to it and use it rather than it using us, sort of dragging us around. Maybe one other bit of avijja that I'll just mention, which I think has been coming up kind of in the retreat quite a lot, that our tendency to denial or to compartmentalizing in our minds, in our lives, in our hearts with other people, of not being willing to, or not being able to, you know, address certain issues or feel certain emotions, or, you know, be with a certain person, or, you know, maybe it's about bodily health, maybe it's about political, you know, social, economic situation. Also that sort of thing where we don't want to see, we can't look, you know, the suffering of another person or an animal, that kind of, where we, any way in which in our life, in our mind, we sort of make walls. It's almost like we kind of train ourselves to sort of cut off, you know, and I think a lot of us do that. It's a kind of survival, isn't it? Just get your head down. But how much that shuts off our intelligence and shuts down our happiness, and learning to kind of bring down some of those walls, isn't it, between what we're willing to feel, what we're unwilling to feel, what we're willing to kind of open to in our emotional life, and how healing it can be, kind of scary, but healing when those walls start coming down. I have this lovely quote from Rainer Maria Rilke, a poet. He said, "Perhaps all the dragons in our lives are only princesses waiting for us to act. Just once, with beauty and courage. Perhaps everything that frightens us is in its deepest essence something helpless that wants our love." So what is it that we are unwilling to feel? I've sometimes used that in moments of distress. Like, I ask myself, you know, what am I unwilling to feel here? And often, if I can really allow that to come to the surface, I can kind of something shifts, and I can kind of move through that. Because often there's something that just And then the thing comes up, and actually, you know, again, the relevance of kindness is actually crucial, isn't it? It's this whole, everything that we're building here is the mind of compassion and care and kindness that can actually hold that. And it can meet it, you know, welcome, this whole theme of welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So maybe that's something, if you like, you can thread into your reflections or your practice at different moments. It's like this seeing, how could I see this in a way that would be helpful? Can I tune into the, oh, you know, it's changing, mysterious, insubstantial. Can I tune into its indefiniteness? Can I actually see how, oh yeah, I know this one. This is a shape in my mind and body, you know, that's what's happening. And to be able to see through that, through it, to what? So, to finish on that enigmatic note, I'll read something from another great Tibetan teacher. And if it doesn't make complete sense, maybe we can let it call us onward, invite us to investigation, and inspire us to open to what is as yet unknown. So this is the Vajra song of the first Sokni Rinpoche. It's rather a kind of proclamational, that's a word. Don't wander. Place mindfulness on guard. Along the road of distraction, Mara lies in ambush. Mara is the mind clinging to like and dislike. So look into the essence of this magic. Free from dualistic fixation. Realize that your mind is unfabricated, primordial purity. There is no Buddha elsewhere. Look at your own face. There is nothing else to search for. Rest in your own place. Non-meditation is spontaneous perfection, so capture the royal seat. So may each of us learn to see clearly and with kindness in ways that bring ease and freedom. And may each of us open to our own wholeness, our own beauty. Time for walking meditation for the last sit.